You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 50! And yes, 50 episodes later, we are still the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. And I have to say, those of you who stuck with us for this long, you deserve some kind of an award or something. You really do. I'd like to think that the show has gotten better, but at the same time, who knows? You know, back during the old podcast I was doing, Tom Harris USA, which may be returning at some time in the not-too-distant future. It's not comics related, but if you wanted to go back and listen to the old shows, and of course the live shows as well, you can go back to TomHarrisUSA.com, and they're all there. I used to get really excited when we'd get to the even-numbered episodes, like 30 and 50 and 80, just because it seemed to be a logical milestone. The real special episode this time, folks, is going to be episode number 52, because that is the one-year anniversary of Radio Free Asgard. And we're going to have a very special guest on the show. I don't want to spoil it, but it's going to be different from our normal episode. And I think you all are going to be really interested in what's going on. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I'll give you a bit more detail next time. And just because I don't want to jinx it. Not that I'm superstitious or anything. But I'm really excited about it. And it's going to be really, really cool. But even though this isn't officially the really special episode, we still have some really special stuff for you, because it actually is still a special episode for us. As you know, about every 10 episodes, we do a profile of one of the Norse gods. And this time around, we're actually going to be focusing on Thor himself. Now, obviously, we've spent a lot of time on this program talking about the Marvel Comics version of Thor, but we really haven't spent much time talking about the actual mythological version of Thor, or quote-unquote, the real Thor. As with most of the Norse gods, the best information that we have about Thor comes from Snorri Sturluson in his translation of the Eddas. Now, Snorri, being a Christian, has created a little bit of a dilemma, because obviously his point of view is not that Thor was actually a god living in a place called Asgard that was sort of a godly realm. He placed Thor firmly on Earth. He felt that Thor was actually the prince of Troy, the son of King Memnon of Troy, and a woman named Troana. After the Trojan War, Thor supposedly immigrated east of the Trojan kingdom and settled somewhere in Asia, founded a kingdom called Asgard. In Snorri's view, Thor was the ancestor and not the descendant of Odin. At this point, I'm pretty sure that Snorri was smoking crack. The more traditional view, of course, is that Thor was the son of Odin and the Norse earth goddess Fjorgyn, who may have been a remnant of an earlier earth goddess. In some versions of the myth, she is a giantess named Jord, which means literally earth in Old Norse. So in a lot of ways, Thor is actually the son of Mother Earth. Thor is described in the myths as being vicious and ill-tempered, has red hair and a beard, spends a lot of time fighting giants and trolls in the east, which, according to folklore, he slays with his lightning. And that is why they say in Scandinavia that whatever lightning is striking the earth, that's actually Thor striking dead a troll or a giant, and that's why you don't see very many trolls and giants running around in Scandinavia. But despite his documented dislike of Jotnar in general, Thor, like many of the gods, had a giantess mistress, Jarnsaxa, with whom he fathered a son, Magni. The myths say that Thor had another son, Modi, but it's unclear as to who exactly Modi's mother was, though some of the myths actually attribute him to Jarnsaxa as well. Now, of course, in the myths, Thor was also married to Sif and had a daughter, Thrud, who may or may not have actually been one of the Valkyries, and is also the stepfather of the god Ull. Thor rides a cart or a chariot drawn by two goats, Toothgnasher and Toothgrinder. In Norse, that's Tannhjostr and Tanngrisni, which actually mean the same thing in Old Norse. So that's kind of cool, actually. And it's said that the sound of Thor's chariot causes the sound of thunder, and the metal wheels cause the sparks of lightning. When Thor is traveling, his goats are really cool because he doesn't have to carry any food with him. Thor actually devours his goats, cooks them, and places their bones in a sack. And the next morning, he resurrects his goats, and they go on their merry way, which I suppose saves a lot of money and, you know, trips to the supermarket. Thor's main weapon is his hammer Mjolnir, otherwise known as Crusher, which was crafted by the dwarves and was one of the three treasures presented to the gods by Loki as sort of repayment for having cut off Sif's hair. We covered that particular myth back in Radio Free Asgard episode number 18. Thor also possesses a magical belt called Meganjarpr, which doubles his strength, and magical gloves called Jarngripper, which must be very handy when he wants to knit. The Roman historian Tacitus described the Germanic tribes' worship of Thor and the other Norse gods, and interestingly enough, is directly equated Thor with Hercules. And in Roman mythology, the two are identical, because they're equating Thor's hammer with Hercules' mace. Now, of course, there are other incarnations of Thor in different mythologies scattered throughout Europe. And even, you could argue, some that exist in India as well. All of them spring from the same Indo-European roots. This would include the German Donar, the Anglo-Saxon Thunor, the Gaulish Thorin, and the Irish Turin. There's some minor variation, but they're all basically the same dude. And I have no idea if this includes both Marvel and DC versions of the character as well. Even back in Nordic times, Thor was seen as a protector of the earth, and his hammer was a very commonly used amulet sigil. So people would actually wear Thor's hammer as magic, as a form of protection. They felt that Thor, being the son of the earth, was the protector of the earth. And that's something that actually carried over into the comic as well. And although he's technically less important in the Norse pantheon than his father Odin and the fertility god Frey, Thor was arguably the most popular. If you listen to the historians like Adam of Bremen, who went to visit Uppsala in the early medieval period, he visited the great temple and described Thor's statue as being the most prominent at the temple, and that Odin and Frey's statues were not there. I mean, Thor, of course, he presided over the air. He was the god who made it rain and thunder and lightning. And because of that, when you have an agrarian culture, is a very important god. He's the one who kept the rains falling. He's the one who was responsible for the crops growing. And people would sacrifice to him at the great temple. Adam of Bremen remarked that they would offer him libations, which to me means some sort of a beverage, like beer or mead. Obviously, Thor, very important for, you know, the raising of crops. And just like today, Thor was a very popular character. There are several myths that still exist, and probably dozens, maybe even hundreds more stories of Thor that have been lost. And it was very popular to have people telling stories of Thor around the campfire. You could call him, in the real traditional sense, one of the very first superheroes. Now, moving on to the comics, Thor has appeared in many places besides Marvel Comics, and often he appears as a villain. I'm hoping to be able to get a hold of some of these things and go over them in future episodes. The first comic book appearance of Thor that I've been able to find took place in Weird Comics number 1, which was published in 1940 by Fox Publications. Fox Publications, of course, being one of the companies that Jack Kirby worked for back in before the Timely era, before Marvel ever existed. And this version of Thor was actually a human being who was given lightning powers by the real Thor. Now, the Marvel version of Thor differs in several key ways from his mythological counterpart. In the myths, Thor had red hair and a long red beard. He was often described as burly or stout. He was very short-tempered and tended to act hastily. He's often portrayed as being rather jealous, especially when it came to Sif, and was really kind of easily fooled. He wasn't really all that smart, and usually would choose violence over diplomacy. And even though he was married to Sif, he would sneak off to go visit his mistress, the giantess Jarnsaxa. And while he would disguise himself occasionally, at least one time of that was in drag, he didn't actually have a secret identity. In the comics, Thor has blonde hair and is clean shaven for the most part. I know that there are some stories where he's not. He's more athletic and trim than burly, and is rather more even-tempered and thoughtful in the comics, even though he's kind of prone to fits of Stanley's scripted hysteria sometimes. In the comics, Thor is single, and he occasionally would have other romantic interests, such as Jane Foster, and of course Sif, who he was married to in the myths. On Earth, he has secret identities, the most notable of which is Don Blake, but also Sigurd Jarlsson, and his essence, as it were, has existed in other people as well. And different writers have portrayed him differently, but the classic version of Thor in the comics is generally more straight-laced and heroic than the more volatile Thor that we see in the Norse myths. As in the myths in the comics, Thor is the son of Odin and of the Earth goddess Gaia, though it's a little bit different from the Norse version, but essentially is the same thing. The Earth goddess is Thor's mother, therefore Thor is the guardian of the Earth. And his role as the protector of Midgard, or Earth, is one that he takes very much more seriously than his mythological counterpart. Now, as far as Thor affecting our lives in the real world, well, everybody knows that Thor is alive and well. Come on, we've seen the Thor movie, right? So we know, you know, movies don't lie. He's obviously alive. And of course, we have a day of the week named after him, being Thursday. And of course, we've all heard lightning and thunder. So who do you think causes that? All right, so that is our little profile of Thor. Hope you enjoyed it. And now let's move along to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
So for the review portion of this epic anniversary episode, we have Mr. Scott Coles with us. Hello, Scott.
Oh, no. You're bringing me in for the epic one?
Yeah. Episode number 50, man.
Wow.
And you know, Scott has been with us almost since the very beginning, first appearing back in Radio Free Asgard, episode 3. So Basically, you've been with us for pretty much the entire time.
Off and on. I'm like a neighborhood cat and sort of comes around every once in a while. You feed me every once in a while, and then I bugger off again to do my cat and stuff.
And then you kind of wander back when you get
stuff
hungry.
Like that.
And that's why we keep Tim Hortons coffee and donuts out on the back stairs at all times.
Yeah, that's always a good policy. Yeah. Beer would be good too.
Yeah, well, what kind of, do they still drink Molson's beer in Canada?
Some people do. I'm not one of them, but some people do.
Yeah. I'm no expert on beer because, as everybody knows, I actually despise the stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's an acquired taste. I honestly, I didn't like it when I was, well, younger. But eventually, when you hang around in rural Canada, you realize that anywhere you go to visit someone, they'll generally offer you a beer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's either be rude or just learn to drink beer, and I did.
I think it's really kind of the same here, except I've never acquired a taste for it. And I'm more, coffee and cider and sometimes whiskey, but...
Honestly, coffee is one of the ones that I don't really... I'm not a coffee guy.
Yeah, my dad's not a coffee.
I don't need caffeine. I need depressants. I need things that are going to bring me down. Otherwise, I just go bad shit, so...
Just kind of explode in a maple syrup-fueled rage.
Yes, yes. And it's not pretty. It's sticky and not pretty.
It doesn't sound pretty. No. Sticky Scott is not something I need to be thinking about. Anyway, so we're going to cover Marvel Graphic Novel number 33. I think that's the number anyway. It doesn't actually have a number on the book. And this is a really weird comic book because, you know, Marvel was trying to break new ground. I mean, they had the death of Captain Marvel. They had the Star Slammers. They had a bunch of this early graphic novel stuff that were really good and really innovative. And then they came out with this.
Is this before or after God Loves, Man Kills?
Yeah, this is definitely after that. This is a couple of years after that.
Yeah.
And so we are going to be covering the Thor graphic novel, I, Whom the Gods Would Destroy.
Bum, bum, bum.
Dun, dun, dun. And the really weird thing about this graphic novel is that it came out quite some time after Walt Simonson had taken over the Thor book. So we're basically dealing with characters that appeared as they did before Simonson took over the run.
Ah.
And it's in a weird kind of limbo as far as continuity goes. It doesn't really fit anywhere in the classic Thor run before Simonson took over. And we'll find out when we start getting into it exactly what's really weird about this thing. But anyway, so the story was plotted by Jim Shooter. It was actually written by Jim Owsley, and we'll talk more about him in a second. Drawn by Paul Ryan. Inks by
Paul Ryan.
Yeah. Inks by our good friend Vinny Coletta.
I don't like him so much.
Yeah. Colors by Bob Sharon. The letterer was Rick Parker. He was doing quite a lot of stuff for Marvel during this era. Design. This is the one you don't get every day.
Yeah. What the heck?
Dawn Geiger. Never heard of her.
I have, actually. I remember her from... they used to do those profiles in the Marvel Comics, the like assistant editors and stuff like that.
Okay.
She was in, I remember her being in one of them. I just remember seeing the caricature of her and the name.
Did she count things?
Perhaps she did. Maybe.
The logo by Alex J, which is interesting because I thought that was a Simonson designed logo, but I could be completely wrong. Consulting editors, Ralph Macchio, John Romita Sr., Don Perlin. Don Perlin, that's a name I haven't heard.
Karate Kid was a consulting editor?
Yeah, we've done that joke on the show already. Editor Lynn Cohen, and the editor-in-chief was Tom DeFalco, which is interesting because this is like obviously right after Shooter stopped being the editor-in-chief.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't worry about the editorial assistants because they're not
important. Oh, except for one of them, Spencer Snigg. S-N-Y-D-G. That is a great, great name.
It sounds like a J.K. Rowling character.
It sounds like he's been made up, yeah.
Yeah, he's a member of Slytherin.
Definitely Slytherin.
Yeah. Well, based on these names, I would say, Jim Shooter has got to be Slytherin as well.
Yeah, probably.
Owsley, that sounds like a Hufflepuff.
I was going to say Ravenclaw because it's kind of like owl.
Yeah, well, Ravenclaw, Paul Ryan,
Paul Ryan's Gryffindor.
Yeah, Gryffindor. Coletta, what would Coletta?
Slytherin.
The Slytherin, yeah, because all Italians are evil. No, let's see, Bob Sharon, that would be, we'll say Hufflepuff, because I feel sorry for them. Rick Parker, that's a heroic name, so I'd say Gryffindor.
Mm-hmm.
Don Geiger.
Ravenclaw,
okay. Alex J.
Yeah, Hufflepuff.
Okay. Macchio.
I'm like the sorting hat here. This is awesome. Ralph Macchio. Muy Macchio.
Wax on, wax off.
Well, in that case, Slytherin.
So, yeah. They're the ones who are into waxing. Johnny Romita Sr.
Senior? He's got to be a teacher of some sort. I don't think
Yeah, you'd think so. I mean, he was a venerable character at Marvel during that time. I would say, yeah, he's the dark arts master.
Yeah, yeah.
They had this
season, yeah.
Yeah. Don Perlin.
He's probably Potions Master.
Okay. Lynn Cohen.
I think she runs the tea cart.
She's the tea lady.
Tea lady on the train.
And Tom DeFalco. It sounds like the janitor.
No, he's the old guy with the cat.
Yeah,
groundskeeper Willie or whatever his name is.
There you go. Okay, so now that we've Harry Potterized the crew that worked on this, we can get into the story. Oh, but before we do that, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the creative staff on this book. Jim Shooter, of course, born 1952 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's very well known for having started in comics at a very young age. In fact, he sent his first submission to DC at the age of 13, and by the age of 14 was working for Mort Weisinger at DC Comics writing the Legion of Superheroes. That would have been in 1966. He temporarily quit comics after he graduated from high school, but he returned to comics in the mid-1970s. By the mid to late 1970s, he'd worked his way up the editorial structure over at Marvel, and in 1978 became Marvel's editor-in-chief, a position that he held until he was fired in 1987. Jim Shooter's always been kind of a divisive and controversial figure, based largely on his abrasive personality. A lot of the creative people really, really hated working for him. But by and large, his time at Marvel was a very profitable time for the company. I mean, they had some of the big maxi events like Secret Wars and stuff going on during that time. And interestingly enough, he was one of the first to institute some of the basic reforms into Marvel's work-for-hire system. After he was fired from Marvel in 1987, he attempted to buy Marvel, but unfortunately had failed. 1988, Shooter went on to found Valiant Comics, whose titles were mostly licensed characters. and in 1992 was forced out of Valiant and went on to found or co-found two more comics companies, both of which folded pretty shortly thereafter. Shooter still dabbles in comics writing today, most recently over at DC, and of course he has a blog where he talks about his experiences and his opinions and so forth over at jimshooter.com. Now, as for the writer Jim Owsley, he was born 1961 in Queens, New York. He joined Marvel in the early 1980s, working as an assistant editor to Larry Hama on the Conan books. Worked his way up to being the editor of the Spider-Man books, but ended up leaving Marvel on bad terms in 1987. Went over to DC then, where he edited some of their Impact Comics titles, and in the 90s, he was one of the co-founders of DC's Milestone imprint. Shortly thereafter, Owsley changed his name to Christopher Priest and is still writing under that name today. All right, so penciler Paul Ryan. Born 1949, he was a longtime penciler for Marvel on the Fantastic Four. He actually started in the mid-1980s, inking and penciling second-tier Marvel books. This eventually led to a long run as penciler of the Fantastic Four, as well as other projects such as the Thor graphic novel. In the late 90s, he took over penciling duties on the Spider-Man newspaper strip, which he did for 3 years. And in 1999, he began working for Egmont Publications in Sweden, drawing features for their magazine, Fantomi, or The Phantom. This led to him becoming the regular artist on the Phantom newspaper comic strip, which he continues to do today. All right, so that's a little bit about our creative team. On the cover, we have a dramatic shot of Thor, and he's floating in space, and he's got his arms kind of thrust out to his sides, and his eyes are closed, and he looks like he's in pain. And that's basically just what the cover is. And of course, the name of the story, I, Whom the Gods Would Destroy. So we open up looking at New York City, and there's a thunderstorm going on, and you see the water is all wavy and troubled, and the sky is weird shades of purple and blue and pink, because they're taking advantage of this nifty color process that these graphic novels had.
It looks really good. It's very gaudy and garish, but I mean, the color quality is excellent.
Well, remember this era, you know, this came out in 1987, I think.
Yeah.
89, or somewhere in the late 80s. And you have this, you know, they were still getting used to having a broader color palette when they moved from the old letterpress stuff to the flexographic stuff.
Yeah, the full processed color.
And if you know, go think back to the death of Captain Marvel and the Raven Banner and some of these other ones that were coming around the same time. And This is really comic booky when you compare it to them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so we have this storm going on, and who causes storms? Well, is probably Thor. So we've kind of, where is Thor? As we kind of pan through the streets using our high budget cameras, and they end up in this sleazy bar somewhere in Manhattan, and we go into the bar and we see a bartender looks like a little bit like Jack Kirby, and you've got Don Blake sitting at the bar nursing his sorrows, and a couple tough looking like cab driver kind of guys arm wrestling on the table in front of him. And he looks like, Don Blake looks like he's kind of drowning his sorrows, and bartender's like, none of my business, Joe, but don't you think you ought to slow down?
Okay.
No.
It's like he doesn't want to sell him drinks or something.
Seriously. And Don Blake's like, no, because he's drowning his sorrows. And he's thinking back to the events of the day, and it looks as though he lost a patient.
Oh, no.
Because, Don Blake
is... Because could never have happened to him before.
I know. And you'd think, okay, Don Blake has been a doctor since, 1961 at least.
Yeah.
And he's never lost a patient before now.
Well, he's really good, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. well, he could invent the green android, so there you go.
That's true.
Though I think that's the only time he did anything like that. All right. So so this woman who's dressed in a red raincoat, so she must be a fireman or something, notices him and comes up to him and starts poking around in his business and asking, is that about a woman? And he basically tells her to piss off and that he's really not into this right now. And she's like, no, you're into your 7th Canadian club. I'm surprised you can still stand up straight. Because she sounds exactly like Jane Foster.
Canadian club. All right.
Yeah. A good rye whiskey that burns all the way down.
That's right.
Now, the bartender, who doesn't look as much like Kirby in this panel, says, hey, Joe, you driving? and she goes, I'm driving, because her name is Joe. And Don Blake asks for a refill and gets it. And they're just getting to know each other, making small talk, which is kind of weird because it's a graphic novel. You don't want to hear this shit.
That's good.
But she's basically telling him, you know, hey, it wouldn't hurt you to talk about it, blah, blah, blah. He introduces himself as a doctor and tells her that he lost a patient today. And as they're talking, a strange woman enters the bar, and she's wearing a garish outfit.
It's
like a chartreuse green cape and a hot pink, very short skirt.
Like shorter at the sides than it is the front.
Yeah, part. It's like there's nothing. She's not wearing anything under that. I'll tell you that right now, because she couldn't hide it. I mean, they didn't have thongs back in the '80s.
Are you sure?
They probably did. I don't know. I'm just pulling that out of my ass. Come on.
I know. I didn't see any at that point. I was pretty young.
They weren't popular at that time. And she's wearing these really uncomfortable looking boots that lace all the way up to mid thigh.
Mm-hmm. They like don't ballet slippers, but they have straps that go all the way up to her thighs.
Yeah, and it looks like they wouldn't stay on, but you that's just think. Me. Now, we do eventually find out who this is, but we don't find out for quite a few pages. She is coming to Don Blake, and she says, "My lord, this belongs to thee. Take, my lord, and let us... Why do you come here?"
No, she's holding a piece of wood.
She's holding what we recognize to be Don Blake's cane.
Oh.
And so she says, "Take, my lord, and let us... Why come you here?" And the woman in the red raincoat is saying, like, "Why come you here? Begone! Hie ye back to my father's house." It looks like they're going to create a little bit of scene. And this woman says, "Lord, I beg of thee, take thy staff." Oh, my.
Hey, now.
And the guys in the background are like, "Come on, mister, take it."
Yeah, we want to watch. That guy's got his hand in his pockets already. That's
seriously. Somebody like her would beg me. Hey, baby, if he don't want it, I'll. And she's kind of being a bit of a bitch to him, and she's telling him that his place is above in the heavens, in the land of thy father. And we see a vignette of Odin and Thor and some troll giant guys and some warrior person. And they're on her side. You got a split panel here, and you have the Asgard stuff on her side. And then on Don Blake's side, you have like grandparents, and a guy who looks a little bit like Jim Shooter, and the blonde woman with a baby, and a construction worker who looks nothing like Sigurd Jarlson.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that supposed to be Don Blake, or what's going on there?
I don't think it is.
Can it be a... construction worker?
Maybe somebody told him that you know, Thor worked as a construction worker, and this is what they came up with. I don't know.
Maybe.
Anyway, she's saying, "My lord, thy place is above the heavens in the land of thy father. And who art thou, woman, to tell me my rightful place? The earth is my mother as surely as the All-Father sired me. 'Twas not my choice, and yet my heart is torn. A great measure of my soul longs on the golden streets of my homeland, yet there is mortality within me. A part of me belongs to Midgard, and revels in joyous fellowship with mortal men." It certainly doesn't look like he's reveling here.
He's one loquacious dude.
Yeah, he's a drama queen. Don Blake is just as much of a drama queen as Thor, at least in the Marvel Comics version.
Yep.
So on the next page, one of the guys decides to start hitting on this lady, and says, "That's a real shame, mister. I'm of a mind to fellowship with women myself. Hey, babe, let's lose this chump." And she beats him up. Well, she takes, so he picks him up and throws him into the jukebox. I guess that's a jukebox. It's hard to tell. And she's not real happy about this. And then the other guys who are in the bar, one of whom is wearing an Ed Norton hat, which is from the honeymoon.
The fold up at the front there.
Yeah. Or Yogi Bear hat, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
They decide they're going to beat her up for throwing their friend, and she draws her sword.
Starts to draw. If she actually draws it, then that's game over.
Oh, that's true, yeah. And Don Blake jumps in front of her saying, "Hold it, guys. She's from out of town." Like, that's going to fool anybody. But they decide they're going to knock him aside and go after her. And he picks up the cane and says, "Woman, art thou satisfied? Leave," and throws the cane back at her. And she picks it up and she leaves.
Well, there you go.
Yep. And so that's the end of this rather uninteresting bar brawl.
Oh, my God.
And so he's back talking with this lady in the red raincoat, and they're saying, "Maybe we should leave." And they agree. They go outside, and he goes, "Is that your car?" "Nope. You said you were driving. Sue me. Like, it's none of my business, but what was that all about?" And he explains once again that he lost a man, and we have ads on the wall here for X Factor.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. Even the graffiti in the Marvel Universe isn't ahead.
Yep.
Yep. So we learned that the woman with the sword was actually Sif, and that she had come to take him back to Asgard. And they're walking in the rain underneath this woman's umbrella. We still don't know her name, this woman in the red raincoat.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it really doesn't, because she's not much of a character, to be quite honest.
She's kind of butch looking, to be honest.
She looks like a retired prostitute or something.
Yeah, she's very plain. And
yeah, like, she's kind of looks like the kind of loose woman who hangs around in bars.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah. And as I've always said about hanging around in bars, is that you meet the kind of people who like to hang around in bars.
That is very true. I've met a lot of those people.
Yeah, I've met a lot of those people myself. So anyway, so he's trying to explain a little bit to her about his background. And the thing I get here is like, well, Sif had absolutely no concern about Don Blake's secret identity. None at all.
Clear, yeah.
And in this scene, he has absolutely no concern for his secret identity talking to this red raincoat lady.
Yeah, well,
who's
she going to tell? I mean, honestly, she just hangs around in bars. No one's going to believe her anyway.
That's right. She has no credibility in the real world. So he's telling her that he comes from a land of giants and immortals. My father is king of the realm. Once in a fit of anger, he made me half mortal to teach me humility. So I've got a split heritage of sorts. I've got one foot in Asgard, the home of the gods, where goblins and trolls are as common as mice. Oh, not quite that common. Where we make war, have feasts, and make more war. Sif is a part of that world.
Sorry.
I like to see, they show a scene of Thor's fighting like Frost Giant and Lightning. And then they show the gods reveling at like these big tables, and Odin's there in a big winged hat. And then they show scenes from Earth, and he says, well, I also belong here on Earth. We call it Midgard. Wars are less glorious here. Time moves with incredible swiftness, limiting mortal lifespans to comparable blinks of immortal eyes. Here there is want, sickness, hunger, and death. It is here that I am subject to the same mortal risks as you, but here I am at my happiest.
And yeah, because sickness and death is awesome.
Yeah, I know, seriously. And because he's a doctor, he never sees it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they finally arrive back at her brownstone, and she invites him up to his apartment.
To his apartment or hers?
Oh, her. I'm sorry. Sorry.
You thought she was a dude too.
I thought she was just a dude. Then. Yeah, I'm gonna cut that out. All right. So so they arrive back at her apartment building, and she invites him up and says that she has lots of coffee. And yeah, I've heard lines before, but do you want to come up and look at my coffee? Isn't one of them.
I've got lots of it.
I've got lots of coffee, baby.
My coffee's huge, if you know what I mean. What? No, yeah. I don't, ma'am.
And I've got enormous beans. Yeah. So it's clear that she really doesn't believe what he's telling her. Yeah. So anyway, she tells him that she won't bite. And he's thinking to himself that he kills with a scalpel, which, if taken out of context, that would be
really... If you take that pedal and put it on a t-shirt, that dude's a serial killer right there.
Exactly. Well, apparently he got to start with this graphic novel.
Yeah.
So anyway, she invites him into her dingy apartment. It actually doesn't look all that bad.
No.
Yeah, nice. That's just pretty ordinary. And they embrace, and I guess there's a scene that doesn't show because...
The wow wow music.
I'm going to edit in some porno music for that scene. So Don Blake has a one-night stand with this chick.
Which, Don.
Which you couldn't really do in a regular Thor comic, but... I think this by
a graphic novel, you can totally bang.
You
a
can totally, novel. Yeah. And they don't show anything. And, you know, a scene like this would be commonplace in today's comics.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah. And worse.
That's one of the things that's not as good about today's comics, but I do, yeah.
Yeah. So they have sex, apparently, and there's a thunderstorm going on during this. And we see that Sif is standing outside in the rain, holding on to Don Blake's staff, while the woman in the red raincoat is holding on to his other staff.
Yee.
Hey-o! Hello! Oh, my.
I thought the lightning bolt in that panel there, that was the sort of symbol for his orgasm.
Yeah.
It's like the rocket shooting off and the train going in the tunnel, all that stuff.
Exactly.
It's the stock footage symbol of Don Blake's orgasm.
Absolutely was. And of course, she didn't come because he's Don Blake.
Exactly.
Lame Dr. Blake.
He's lame. What do you want?
I know. Though progressively less lame. You know, he doesn't really seem like he needs the staff in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
He's just faking it.
Yeah.
To get pity.
Get the checks. It works.
That's right. All right. Don Blake.
So they wake up in the morning and the staff mysteriously is next to the bed. So Sif came in and saw them. And so she's like, Don Blake is blast. And she's like, where did you get that from? Did you go out for it? Yeah, I suppose. I was drunk, remember?
Morning wood.
Yes, it's morning wood. That was a good one. So he's rather disturbed to have the cane appear next to the bed, and I suppose I would be too. They can't really blame him for that. But he decides that he's going to climb up to the roof and scream because Don Blake is almost as much of a drama queen as Thor. And he screams out, "Father! I know you're watching, resting pompously in your seat of power, observing with the great disdain the strivings of man. I hope I am sufficiently amusing, Father. I hope you're having a good time." I bet he is.
Yeah, no kidding.
Using his cosmic voyeuroscope.
That's right.
It's like Odin and his built-in porn viewer has a box of tissues there, you know. And she doesn't seem to believe him, but you think I'm crazy, don't you? Well, maybe I am. I don't know what I think, Don. My father doesn't understand me. And then he gets mad at her for patronizing him and then insults him. He insults her by saying, "Look, you had a good time last night. You don't have to pretend it meant anything."
Don, she was the one that had the lightning bolt, sir.
Yeah, seriously. You
had the good time. Yeah. She was just there.
Yeah, right. And so she leaves, or she goes to leave. And then he stops her and says, "Hey," and he changes into Thor.
Bum, bum, bum.
So if there was any doubt that he was telling the truth, this has now been completely dispelled because he just proved that he was Thor and apologizes. She's
like, "You let me bang you looking like that when you could have looked like this."
Seriously,
jerk.
And so he says, "Look, I'm sorry. I shouldn't take out my problems on you," and decides to take her for a flight wearing her bathrobe.
Yeah.
So all of New York City can look up her bathrobe.
Yes.
And they go someplace where they can talk because they're alone on top of this building and they can't talk there.
That's right.
So.
Oh, you never know when Spider-Man might fly by, you know.
Yeah, but wait till you see where they go. So they take off towards the heavens, as it says, and she's flying with Thor, and there's an old lady hanging out laundry, and we see that Sif is standing in the middle of Central Park.
Like she does.
Yeah, like she does, and basically we're getting a little bit of her monologue, and leading us in this section of the story will be Scott.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So, "My love is as a turbulent storm in a peaceful meadow. My love is as a fiery furnace amid gelid mountains, an eagle among sparrows. To his strong arm I am drawn. His strength is my strength. Would that I could be his as well." She's got her sword out. She's got the stick. Now, how does she have the stick? Doesn't he have the stick?
She must have gone back into the apartment and grabbed it. But he would need that to become Thor. So, continuity error.
Wait, what? Unless this takes place before that happens.
This is maybe
flashback. Well, I guess we'll find out.
It doesn't say. And if it is not a flashback, then it's really bad storytelling.
Yeah. So anyway, she gestures with the sword and Bifrost comes down. And she hops on, and there's Heimdall. He's like, "Hey, proceed no further. State thy name and purpose."
Because she's his sister.
And like, yeah, how does he not know? She's been around for how many thousands of years?
And how well can he see?
Yeah. That's it. He sees so well that he can't discern outer features anymore. He can only see atoms and stuff.
Right.
So she's just like a mass of molecules as far as he's concerned. So he's got to have everybody state their name to him so he knows which molecules they are.
Basically, I think that the writer here has forgotten that Sif and Heimdall are brother and sister.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. And she basically goes into, "His eyes are sharp enough to see moss grow a universe away. His ears are keen enough to hear a sparrow's whisper on Midgard."
All the sparrows are whispering. Lame.
She's forgotten that he's her brother, too. So.
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
There we go. And she heads into the Asgard castle there. I guess it's Odin's, it's the outer wall of Asgard. See, the dudes at the wall, they know who she is.
Yeah.
They're like, hail, Sif, hail, fairest of all goddesses, most revered, blah, 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 blah. Welcome back, m'lady. That's so weird that Heimdall is like, who are you? And these guys are like, hey, how's it going? Welcome back.
You gotta love the way that different artists draw Asgard, because none of them actually ever draw it the same. But here it's very Disneyland, kind of a fairy tale castle.
Yeah, it's fairly strictly castle. There's a kind of a weird building in the back there. And there's that one build, and then there's that one piece that's got a lot of glass on it. So I guess he's kind of mixing it up, but yeah, it mostly looks pretty Game of Thrones.
That one tower looks like it's the headquarters of the Asgard Vibrator Factory.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on in there.
There's a giant boob in the background.
Maybe that's Odin's voyeur room. That's where he keeps his voyeur pool.
Yeah, that could be.
The peeping pool.
The peeping pool. It's like a giant urinal.
Yeah. So she's walking through the streets. There's a juggler and a barmaid pouring grog, I guess, and a blacksmith working on swords, and a dude riding a horse. And she's pretending, she's putting a brave face on. She's like, hey, everybody. And they're like, hey, how's it going?
And she doesn't call anybody by name. She's like, like, hey, old brave warrior.
Hey, that's like, dude.
Yeah. You know?
Hey, dude, what's going on? Buddy. Yeah. So she goes to the Odin Palace, where she will report that which the Allfather already knows. I shall play out my role in obedient subservience, even as my heart is torn asunder. Oh, no. So she walks in, and there's that vizier dude.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name?
I think they just call him vizier or something.
Oh, okay. He's just like a dude.
Yeah.
All wise and eternal sovereign, the Lady Sif approacheth. And we have a full-page splash of Odin once again at the peeping pool,
mm-hmm.
checking out Thor, carrying this lady around the sky. And like he wow, it's he wordy.
Yeah. It's like,
gosh.
It's like Odin doesn't have anything better to do.
He's monologuing something fierce. Suns rise and give their warmth a fragment of life, and in that insignificant flickering moment, mortal men spend lifetimes rushing headlong into oblivion.
Blah, blah, blah.
Basically, I'm awesome, I'm a god, they are nothing, they are men.
My espouses fellowship in maggots.
Maggots, wow. That's what he says. Harsh, dude. He is a fool. He wants to be in Earth instead of Asgard. What a dick. And yet, all goes exactly as I have foreseen. Long ago in anger, I halved my son's godhood and imposed on him mortality. And in doing so, I have sentenced him to death. For godhood in all its splendor is as a monotonous, numbing, eternal damnation to one who knows the exhilaration of time passing quickly and irretrievably. Aye, mortality is a gift. Now, long after the need for him to do so has passed, my son continues to adopt his mortal guise as a mortal. Oh, there's a period in there. I'm like, dude, obvious statement is obvious? What?
Yeah, because he has a mortal guise as a god? I mean, come on.
As a mortal, he is subject to aging, sickness, injury, even death. His very existence is at risk each time he embraces his mortal side. My heart aches with each hour he spends as, quote-unquote, Donald Blake. And now he seems to reject his godhood entirely. Dun-dun-dun.
For no apparent reason, I might add.
Yeah, we're not... Okay, I guess we don't know what happened. What happened in 337? Something bad must have happened.
Well, in 337, Beta Ray Bill appears, but in 336, I think he broke up with Sif. And that was kind of the result of a decision that Thor made that he was going to remain on Earth as Guardian of Earth, and Sif wanted him to come back to Asgard and stay away from Midgard.
So it's partly that and partly the dead dude.
Yep.
See, that seems to me that the breaking up with Sif would be a bigger trigger than... The dead dude. The dead dude's just sort of an excuse.
Right.
I see what's going on there. All right. That makes the other thing a little more... It makes a little more sense now.
Mm-hmm.
He's not just like, oh, suddenly I lost a patient and now I'm sad. All right. So Lady Sif comes in. She's like, hey, I come bearing grim tidings. The mighty Thor doth wrestle with a great melancholy.
In other words, Thor is a drama queen.
Yes. He loves me no more. Boo-hoo, boo-hoo. Be not deceived, Sif. My son dost love thee with a passion unending, springing forth from the well of his soul. Nay, the root of the Thunder God's distress is his own mortality. Okay.
Yeah, if you say so.
All right, true. Well, if Odin says it, it must be true. There is a part of him that longeth for Midgard. He doth perceive things from a unique point of understanding, one forbidden even unto the king of the gods. With his mortal guise cometh a gift of wisdom and understanding, a mortal perception. So she, of course, says, well, give me that gift too, then. He's like, never! You're a girl.
It's too dangerous for a girl.
That's right. I have lost one child to Midgard Sif. I shall not lose another. Okay, so he's like, I screwed up. I shouldn't have given it to Thor either, but now he's got it, so maybe it was a bad idea. And she says, well, he still keeps doing it. He's like, I know. They told him to stop, but he won't stop. He didn't anticipate him enjoying being immortal. he's like, he hath likened himself unto a mortal man. Now he doth strive to reconcile both God and man. And that, most wise father, dost leave me shattered and lonely. Play some sad Hulk music. And we flash back to Thor. Thor is flying around with his new girlfriend in her bathrobe.
It didn't say anything about it being a flashback.
That is weird.
I think it's just, I think they made a boo-boo.
Well, she doesn't have the staff now.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't see her drop it anywhere.
She gave it to a horse dude or something.
Yeah, she sold it for a beer or something, I'm not sure.
The juggler got a tip. Or she traded it for a handful of magical beans.
That's right. Smacked him in the head with a stick.
Yeah.
So she's flying it with Thor, and she's like, wow, wow, wow.
They can see right up my skirt.
Take a look at that, everybody.
Yeah. And people are pointing.
He said, holy Christ, that's a huge vagina. What? No. So Thor's like, yeah, I'm a god. This stuff is, you know, this is just nothing to me. You're like, whoa, this is awesome. But I'm like, whatever. He's very emo. Yeah. Sometimes I want to leave this part of my life behind, destroy the cane, and sever my ties with Asgard and my father. Live my life as a man. She's like, what? Aren't you going a little overboard here? See, she's calling him out. She's like, you're a drama queen.
Uh-huh.
You got this power, that hammer, this body. What's so bad about it? Look, Don, everybody's got their hang-ups with their parents, but you got this magic working for you. We could fly down to Rio or Paris. You could carve your name in the sides of mountains. You could have everything. He's like, I've already had everything. I've had an immortal existence that goes on and on, each day just like the one before it. What?
Everything sucks.
Yeah, thinking sucks. Stuff sucks. Whatever. She does not understand. Like Sif. Like my father. Perhaps I am a madman. He doesn't even talk to her. He just takes off. Uh-huh. No bye. No thanks for the, the polish. Nothing.
Uh-huh.
See you later. She said, wow, nobody's going to believe this. I had a one-night stand with Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a jerk about it.
Well, that's the part that's believable.
That's true. It's like no breakfast, no nothing.
Yeah. Well, he did take her flying.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. That's like breakfast.
She probably lost her breakfast.
Yeah. He's flying around. He hears a child crying. He feels nothing. Oh, poor emo Thor. He's so goth in this book.
Wow. Oh, the pain.
That's right. He's like, going to start cutting himself anytime soon.
Uh-huh.
He should start dyeing his hair black. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And of course, there's a precariously balanced crane at a construction site because no one in the Marvel Universe ever, you know, learns how to properly use their equipment.
Where the fuck is OSHA?
I know, eh? Like, there's no workman's comp or nothing. They just drive around and park stuff wherever they want.
Worst construction crew ever.
Yeah. So, yeah, of course, there's a bad load. The crane starts to tip. Everybody's running away. Thor speeds down. Zoom, zoom. Grabs the crane before it squishes Buddy. And tips it right back right side up. Although he does seem to have it still perched precariously on the slope.
Uh-huh.
So he's going to fly away and it's going to fall right back down again. So, dude, thanks Thor for saving his life. And Thor's like, I'm so jealous of that guy because I saved his life.
I wish I could be saved by Thor.
I wish someone would save my life.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's a bank robbery going on, too.
It happens every day.
An hour later, I guess. So he's flying over. The getaway car goes away, and he just walks his hammer down and smashes the front end out of it so it can't drive away. And then the hammer flies back up and the cops catch him. He's like, oh, whatever. So boring. Foiling crime. And then there's a fire. He comes down to talk to the fire chief. He's like, hey, hello, commander. How shall the son of Odin and me aid thee in thy struggle? He's like, get out of here. Take your tights and your pointy hat and get back behind the police barrier. I swear to Moses I'll have you locked up. They are my own, yet they reject me totally. They do not trust what they cannot explain. So he goes up and he calls down a big rainstorm to put the fire out. Just to show the fire chief up. He's like, ah, oh, the fire is rapidly extinguished. The firemen offer a wary salute. Ah, oh, I should be saluting them. Their hearts pound, their breaths quicken. Life is much sweeter.
Life's sweeter for everybody except me. God, it sucks to be Thor.
So then he decides to stop flying around. He's just going to walk downtown Manhattan. No problem, you know. He's just like, he's got his cape on and his hammer tucked into his belt. He's very stiff back, too. He looks like he's doing runway model type walking. Like, not like regular walking.
Like Vogue should be playing.
So he passes an ice cream vendor and says, hey, ain't you one of them Avengers? He's like, yeah, I'm Thor.
Or, yeah, I'm Thor.
Yeah. So he gives him a free ice cream. Thor gets free ice cream, and this guy's still moping around.
It says in the caption that this is a creamsicle, but I have never seen a pink creamsicle.
I have, yeah. They have those up here. We have orange. There's orange and green and pink.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Orange is the best, of course. I don't know why they bother with pink, but...
Okay.
So I guess this guy collects celebrity photos of him with celebrities. So he's like, I got Sinatra, Flip Wilson, Spiro Agnew. Oh, my God. Here's a list of celebrities that barely anyone who listens to this show may have heard of. Uh-huh. Well, actually, maybe this show. You know,
everyone knows Sinatra.
I don't know who your audience is, so maybe they're all old guys, too, like us.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Well, Flip Wilson.
That's stretching celebrity just a little bit, though, isn't it?
Well, he had his own variety show. I think it was on NBC.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
three out of the Jackson Five, probably not the good ones. Probably like Tito. And
yeah, exactly. Tito, Marlon, and Jermaine.
Yeah.
Well, Jermaine, I think, is better than Randy. Yeah, Randy.
Yeah. Poor Randy. Will he ever win?
Yeah, I guess not.
He's like, I have feasted on the nectars of wild fruit in the land of the Norns. I have dined in the exalted halls of the godly realms. This day, I'm offered a creamsicle. A passerby captures our image. The vendor seems pleased. This is not working. Wow.
Apparently he drops the ice cream in the ground.
Yeah, he just ditches the ice cream in favor of the hammer.
Yeah.
I got urgent business elsewhere. He like takes off, flies off. He's like, I could not taste the creamsicle. I cannot appreciate the spectacle below me. The joy of creation sucks.
He's standing on top of the Empire State Building.
Yeah, the Empire State Building, yep. And that's not good enough for people. Pay money to go up there, and he's all like, whatever. I feel nothing. I have soared beyond the edge of the known heavens, into the inky blackness of uncharted creation. I have sailed into the hearts of suns, and now I sit upon a dung heap, overlooking an anthill. And then he looks at his hammer and he's like, and yet part of me belongs here with them. Can it be possible that Donald Blake is more alive than Thor shall ever be?
Thor is tied up in his existential crisis.
Yeah. So he hucks the hammer up straight up into the air and he goes out into space. Wow. He's up in the upper stratosphere there hanging out, wondering why his father damned him and why he can't feel anything as a god. He's like, that's it. Father's laughing at me. I'm going to show him. And he hucks the hammer away and says, I have flung Mjolnir to the farthest reaches of this galaxy. It will take quite some time to return. Uh-huh. I need to be separated from it only 60 seconds. More than enough time.
So basically,
Thor's still going on. It's as late as 87?
Yeah.
Wow.
So Thor's basically committing suicide here, folks.
Does seem that way.
Yeah, this was the last issue of Thor.
So yeah, and just as the hammer's coming back, voop. Thor disappears and Don Blake appears and there's the hammer turns into a stick as it's approaching him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's out, and now it's Don Blake floating out in space. He's like, I can't breathe. I will be dead in seconds. My father mocks me. He knows me too well because the stick is there. Doesn't he have to hit the stick against the ground in order for it to change him?
Yeah. Well,
that's going to be hard to do.
He does get around it, so.
Oh, let's see.
Yep.
So he grabs the stick. Oh, and he hits it against his own foot.
Yeah.
That counts.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, that's lame. He should have to strike it on the earth. on Midgard. That would really screw him over.
He would never go into space if that were the case. <I know. laughs> Goes off to the Kree-Skrull war and he can't hit it against anything.
That's right. Well, he would hold on to his hammer pretty good then. He wouldn't throw it. He wouldn't be doing all that hucking the hammer around action.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I think they have established by now, certainly, and they even had established it somewhat in the 1960s, is that if he's not on Earth, then this whole hammer thing doesn't happen. Because when they had to save him in the last issue of the 1967 Thor comic I was looking at, where Sif actually transported them to Asgard to keep him from changing back into Dr. Blake.
Oh.
But I have a feeling that he's...
Do that on Earth.
Yeah, I think if he's up in space, if he's not on Earth, then it might not...
He's probably work. Okay, all right.
Yeah, might not
well, work. Well, I guess you have to go a certain way away. You have to be out of Earth's gravitational pull.
I could be wrong about that, but that seems to be the way it works.
All right. So anyway, faced with the specter of death, I cling desperately to the safety of the very immortality that I despise. Oh, I suck too.
And he goes back to Earth, and I guess I'll take back over the narration.
Yes.
Okay. Please,
I need a break. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Emo Thor is killing me.
Well, it's like Thor, the drama queen, times four in this.
Yeah, he's just been listening to lots of The Cure.
Yeah, and, seriously.
Painting his nails black, all that stuff. He's just mopey as hell.
So he flies back to Earth and back to New York City, and he lands in the park right next to Sif.
Coincidence?
I think not. I think that's storytelling for you. But keep in mind that Sif has the ability to traverse time and space.
That's true.
So she might have found her way towards him, or he purposely aimed for her. I don't know.
She probably peeked in the old peeping pond there and figured out where he was going to be.
So she's there, and she says, "Greetings, good lord. Hath thou come to mock me again, woman, to make light of my weakness, my inability to face mine own mortality? I, faced with the gaping jaws of death, I did reach for the disguised Mjolnir in my father's enchantment, a drowning man grasping a rope. Nay, my lord, I have not come to mock or scorn, but to love."
And she
goes up and starts rubbing his chest, and... It's like, "Let us be gone, Thor. Let us fly home to Asgard and lie together in a field of poppies." And at that point, a soccer ball comes sailing into the bushes where they're hiding. And a little girl chases after it. And the ball rolls up against Sif. And she's like, "Oh, there it is." And sees the two of them standing there. And Sif's skirt is not covering pretty much anything at this point.
I just walked into a porno set. Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so Thor hands the ball back to the little girl and says, "I believe this is yours.
You keep it. Please don't hurt me."
"And why would I want to hurt you? Do you want to hurt me?"
"No."
"Well, then." And she goes running back to her grandparents and tells them that there was a man with wings on his head and long hair like a hippie.
1980, this... 6-year-old girl knows what a hippie is.
Seriously. And well, she's there with her grandparents. Her parents are probably hippies. Sif doesn't understand why Thor bowed to her. It doesn't look like he's bowing to her. It looks like she's just stooping down to get to her level.
Yeah.
But why did you be nice to that little girl? She was such a bitch.
I would have punched her.
Yeah.
Sif not in the Planned Parenthood camp. She's like, no kids for me, thanks. I'll be all right.
In this story, Sif is kind of a yutz.
Yeah.
Thor is like the child, the wonder in her eyes, the innocence in her smile. "And what of it, my lord? Why care you so for these mortals? Such matters cannot be easily explained, my love. Still, perhaps, I can show you." And he changes back into Don Blake.
Ah, yeah. Because Don Juan Blake knows how to show you a good time.
Seriously. He gets laid more than Thor does. He decides that the way to show her is to take her shopping.
What an idiot.
Her clothes are a bit conspicuous. So Dr. Blake, who apparently they go home and change. One of the really irritating things about that is that's not made clear by the text. There's a lot of stuff in this story that just isn't clear. So basically, just in the next panel, he's wearing a brown suit instead of the blue suit he was wearing earlier.
I guess, yeah. And, his wallet's in that suit.
Yeah, so he had to change into a different suit, shopping at Bloomingdale's. and doesn't apparently think that she's carrying this big old sword. But the security guard at the stores notice, and they call security, and she doesn't want to give it up, so they come to try to take it from her. And she draws the sword on the security guards.
Oh.
She's going to chop them to bits. But looks like a manager comes up and says, "Put those guns down! Are you crazy?" Dr. Blake is trying to explain that his friend is eccentric. Look at Sif's feet here. What the hell?
They look like hooves. Chinese binding going on.
Yeah,
there.
They look like hooves or something. It's terrible.
The foot wrapping stuff.
I think it's just that panel, though.
Screw you, Scary.
Poor Paul Ryan. Store manager is saying, okay, well, she has to check the sword or she's going to have her arrested. And Blake basically tells her, okay, turn your sword in. And Sif doesn't like that, but she does it.
It's her lord.
Yeah, and the manager sends the security guards away and says, "I assume you two are here to spend some money." Yeah, sure.
Better be after that. Sure, after that,
I'll keep the sword and have it delivered with your packages. She just wants to play with the sword.
Yeah, she's gonna go chop some trees down or something.
She's gonna do some cooking after work.
Yeah, ginsu.
Yeah, exactly.
She's gonna cut a tin can with it and then a tomato.
So basically, she chops up all the tin cans in the store and cuts through the counters. That's the part of the graphic novel we don't actually see.
The actual fun part that'd be kind of cool to watch.
Right, exactly.
Somebody going wacky with Sif's sword.
But I heard that Marvel is going to be doing a 6-issue mini about it. So
yeah. By and Michael Bendis. Yeah.
Yeah, and written by Bendis and drawn by I don't know,
David Finch.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds good. Okay, so Don Blake says that they need to buy Sif some clothes, and the manager's like, "Well, fitting her won't be a day at the beach, sport. We'll do what we can." Why is she talking like the lady in the red raincoat?
It is her.
It's like her mother. She's wearing a red dress, which makes it... She's got the same hairdo. She's
her
wearing
nose is smaller, though.
Yeah, and she's wearing the same color. I think it's the raincoat lady's mom.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
And she's like, "Incidentally, what's with the Milord bit? Shakespeare, we're actors."
Yes, we are actors.
Yeah.
Do not tell how good we are acting?
Yes. So then we have a little vignette here, which we should have David Bowie's Fashion playing here while Sif gets a makeover, basically. And I think that really this first panel is the whole reason why this graphic novel was produced, is because we get to see Sif wearing underwear.
Pink lacy underwear, yeah?
Yeah.
See, there were no thongs? I disagree. That looks like a thong to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't look like a thong, but I guess we'll see. Anyway, she tries on, the country jeans, or I don't know.
I don't know what that is. That's sort of country. Like, the shirt looks kind of country, but the jeans definitely are not.
It's kind of like a new wave.
Well, it's the 80s, you know.
Blondie, Debbie Harry sort of jeans, and kind of this very Diana Prince looking dress that she's wearing, a purple thing, and she has her hair done by a very gay looking hairdresser.
That dude rocking that mustache.
That guy is, I mean, you can tell just by the way they drew him that he's supposed to be gay.
Yeah.
It's like, ow, ow, ow.
Mustache rides 10 cents. He's ready.
So she has her hair done and she buys shoes and basically spends lots of money, and who knows where he gets it. I mean, I know he's a doctor, but he actually does less medicine and works less than any other doctor I've ever heard of. They're having the packages and the sword delivered to Don Blake's address, but Sif objects and wants to take her sword, but Blake manages to talk her down. So they go for a walk, and we see the Dakota Hotel there, and they go over this little bridge. I assume that's Central Park there. Well, yeah, it is. Yeah. It says in the caption. So they're going through Central Park.
Crystal clear stream in Central Park? That sounds unlikely to me.
It does sound weird. Yeah, it does. And chirping songbirds in Central Park? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe tape recordings of chirping birds.
They just pipe them in.
Yeah. I think the really the only birds that live in Central Park are pigeons and probably robins and sparrows. Yeah. And maybe squirrels that bum cigarettes off you. So Sif is getting kind of sick of this shit. And he's like, "My lord, we have seen enough." And Don Blake, "Stop that. Stop talking that way. If I can turn it on and off at will, so can you. And stop calling me my lord or Thor. My name is Don. Call me that. I cannot. 'Twould be blasphemous to address the son of Odin thus. Because Don is such a horrible name.
That's right.
Today, Sif, we are mortals. Please, just try a little bit. And she apparently has a really short attention span because he's trying to keep her attention, and they're going through like this market and
Chinatown.
Like a Chinese market, and they're selling all kinds of fruit. And Sif has a piece of rubber pizza, apparently.
Yeah, she's really having a hard time eating that.
I know. It's like, that's
the worst pizza ever. Here it is. Here, try some.
I think the guy's wearing like this Italian flag hat.
It looks like a Rastafarian hat, but it's.
I know. And he looks very Italian. Amused, so I guess they slipped her the latex slice.
Wah, wah. Those wacky Italians in Little Italy.
It's like Candid Camera or something.
Yeah.
It's fine. So they go to Rockefeller Center, and they look at Rockefeller Plaza, I'm sorry, where they see the statue of Prometheus, and go to see the Statue of Liberty, and she doesn't understand.
Smiling and nodding.
Yeah, she kind of doesn't understand the whole idea of liberty, apparently. She wonders why they would build a crude edifice to such dreams. Referring to liberty, of course. And Blake realizes that she doesn't really understand the world, the mortal world at all. And so they finally end up at this restaurant, and it's kind of this really over-the-top, garish place.
Looks like it was built in an old church.
Yeah, it does, kind of. Yeah, that'd be cool, actually.
We actually have a high-end restaurant like that in town here.
Oh, sweet.
Called the Church Restaurant.
All right. So they're at this high-end restaurant, and they're... just kind of chit-chatting, and Sif decides she's going to leave. She really doesn't get what he's trying to show her, and obviously being immortal is much better, and he's basically saying, that he's just trying to enjoy the moment of sitting there with her and enjoying the time together, but she just doesn't get it, and she decides she's going to take off, and he's like, what? But we haven't eaten yet, and she decides she's not going to, and she goes outside, and he runs out after her. He realizes maybe he's overplayed a bit and said, okay, enough for today. And I said, mortal men would call you a pushy broad. Think of it as a compliment.
Yeah.
So
Jim Shooter must have put that line in himself.
He must have, yeah.
You got to use this. You got to use this.
Yeah.
This is cool, they tell you.
So they go back to Don Blake's apartment, and her sword is there, so she's happy now. And the clothes that they bought her.
First smile I've seen all day.
Yeah, seriously. She is a most handsome woman, and she is in love with a mad god.
Bum, bum, bum.
And he's trying to explain to her more and say, you realize, of course, what my problem is. I'm neither god nor man, really. I'm rather stuck in between somewhere, kind of like the continuity of this story.
Yeah.
My lord, really, enough of this fantasy. Thy mortal guise is a little more than the All-Father's enchantment. Thy father's mischief was for a time and a purpose. Thou dost continue thy charade needlessly. Odin knew what he was doing, Sif. He created Dr. Don Blake merely to teach me humility. But he knew full well what it meant. He knew the price long before he molded this image. The All-Father himself was never known what it's like to be immortal. He can't understand why I choose to spend so much time here in this form. He wants to subjugate my human half in favor of my immortal being. He wants me to be his doting son and favorite errand boy. And he's counting on you to bring that to pass. He's counting on your love for me, your innocence. Sif, don't play his game. Stay here with me. Let me help you, teach you, show you true life, true love. And he leans over and kisses her, and she just about bursts out laughing.
Well, look, he's tiny compared to her.
Yeah. She's like, apologies, my lord. Thy mortal guise is so weak, so small. Cast away this visage, I pray thee. Lock me in thine embrace.
Thine iron embrace.
And Blake's getting mad. He's getting pissed off. And it's like, hast thou not heard a word I've spoken unto you? Thou hast ears but hear not, eyes but thou seest not. Yes, I am Thor, god of thunder, son of Odin, paladin of Asgard. I am also a man, and this is not a disguise. And he's like, I'm cursed, Sif. I am cursed to know humanness, and yet be forever barred from it. For wherever I am faced with mine own mortality, I reach for this thrice-damned stick. 'Tis my eternal rescue. And somewhere above the heavens, from the seat of power, the All-Father laughs. Laughs, I tell you. It's probably true. And he goes to throw the cane into the fire, which would not be good. And Sif stops him from doing that, and ends up throwing him across the room and says, like, you're a fool and you're mad too. And she rips her dress off. So we get another lingerie shot here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay. And she runs around in her lingerie for the for the next page.
Yeah.
Just because she can.
She's added a garter belt and stockings to the ensemble.
So she has. Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, okay. So she storms out and leaves the staff behind, and she runs half naked into the street, and he decides not to chase after her. But as she leaves, his beeper goes off. Bleep, bleep, bleep. And Don Blake answers the phone, and it's the hospital. They're calling because there's a medical emergency.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's a doctor, he has to go, unfortunately. So anyway, he tells him, yeah, he'll be right there. And he stops and he picks up his cane and he goes off to the hospital. So apparently there's a...
He walked, so...
Yeah, well, you'd think he would have taken it. There's a taxi cab, so maybe he took the taxi.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm just saying, in that page, he doesn't use the cane to walk. He just carries it out the door.
Yeah, and you kind of wonder how lame he... Yeah, I think they portrayed him as gradually less and less lame over the years. So, I don't know. He's still lame. As a character, he's lame. But so he goes to the hospital, and it's St. Michael's Hospital, which must be a real place. Apparently, there's a hit-and-run accident. Lots of internal bleeding. They can't stop the bleeding, and they're stabilizing, but they need Dr. Blake because he's
got magic hands.
He's the best doctor around, apparently. And he tells I guess he's a nurse. He's dressed as a nurse. That he lost his last patient, so he has no confidence. And they're like, it's you or nobody, Don. If I had half the skill in my hands, I'd saved my quarter and done the procedure myself. Oh, my.
You know.
If I had half the skill in your hands, I would never leave the house. So he assures him that he'll get through it fine, and they get into their scrubs, and he puts on this really dumb-looking hat, and it's time to go and do the surgery. And basically, he's in the operating room with the other doctors, and he can't stop thinking about Sif.
In that lingerie.
Know, and he's thinking back at Sif tearing the dress off and standing there.
Over his wood, symbolically.
Yeah, exactly. There's way too much sexual imagery in the story. So he's thinking about that, and he's thinking about being Thor, and you know, when he flew out into space to commit suicide, and he's thinking he can't actually do the surgery.
Because it's a kid, of course.
Yeah, it's a kid, of course. You know, what would have made this even cheesier if it had been the same kid who kicked
girl
the soccer
from the
ball.
Park? Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It might be. You never know. Her hair's covered up.
Yeah, but it's bigger. Well, I guess not. No, they would have said so. They would have said so.
That's true, I guess.
Yeah, knowing Shooter, they would have said,
yeah.
Hey, it's the little girl from the park.
Oh, no.
So so apparently it's not. So anyway, he goes and his hand is shaking, and just thinking back to the other day when he lost his other patient, and he decides he's going to have a little panic attack and go, no, and he runs out of the room, and he's leaning up against the wall, and he's crying and being all emo. But Reggie comes after him and hands him his cane, which he left in the operating room. And he basically tries to convince him to come back and, you know, saying, yeah, we're going to postpone the surgery as long as we can. Try and pull yourself together. That child needs you. And he's sitting there on the couch in the waiting room being, yeah, because he can't do this privately in his own office. He has to do
it. Well, this way somebody can come by and comfort him.
Yeah.
And from at the bar. So he's figured, you know, why not, eh?
Yeah, exactly. He just wants attention. That's what it is.
He's just trying to pick up again.
Yeah. And so somebody does pay attention to him, and it just happens to be Sif, who apparently returned to Don Blake's apartment and picked up her clothes and got dressed. And so he's sitting there crying, and she comes up, perhaps this is why I love thee, that thou alone amongst gods would shed a tear for the life of a mortal child. Well, how does she know?
Yeah.
Did she go into the operating room too? A flickering upon the face of eternity. There's a great mystery here, my love, one which I fear I shall never fully solve. Of humanness and mortality, I know little nonetheless. I sense in thy tears a strength beyond the might in mine own limbs or in all Asgard. 'Tis a love beyond my comprehension. 'Tis a power that dwarfs even that of the Allfather himself. I pray for thy forgiveness. I do love thee, O great and mighty Thor, in this mortal guise or any other, for the spirit within is thine. And he's like, is it Sif? As Thor, I've seen worlds die, suns explode again and again over the many ages of my existence, until it doesn't bother me at all. Now one life flickers out, and I'm a complete mess. My lord, if conquering an army of Ymir's dreaded kin would save this child, wouldst thou not call forth the power of Thor? Would not Thor hurl himself into the fray and strive against all odds till victory was won?
Yes, of course.
Then would not the part of thee which is the son of Odin conquer thy fear, if thou wouldst not deny him? And he's thinking about it, and it's like, well, maybe it would. And gains his confidence back in the space of three panels.
Nicely done.
And hobbles back into the operating room. Yeah, nice. Yeah, Sif saves the day, I guess. And
that little skirt of hers really stiffens one's resolve.
Yes, it does indeed. And assuming that the child is still alive, he hobbles back into the operating room and performs this miraculous surgery, which I can't think of any hospital that would put up with that shit.
Yeah, really.
I mean, they would have fired his ass, because he's Don Blake, so, yeah.
That's right.
And he's thinking to himself that his father has finally stopped laughing. And we get this disturbing scene. The scene is really disturbing here. It's the vizier and Odin in his throne room, and Odin is sitting. I'm sorry?
And some wolves.
Yeah. It's what are their names? One of them is Giri. They have names.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Odin's wolves, and the vizier's there, and he's saying, "The moment of crisis hath passed. My son hath learned that neither man nor mortal could teach him. He hath learned the way in which he shall walk for all eternity. He has stilled the conflict in his own breast, in the space of three panels. He shall never again strive against his own immortality. Nay, to the contrary, his resolution shall strengthen him all the more. I can only hope that his new consideration will stay death's hand from his mortal frame." I hope I have managed to keep him alive a bit longer. Yeah, because as Dr. Blake, he's constantly trying to kill himself.
That's right. That's why he's cutting himself.
Going to space and trying to die that way. He jumped in front of a subway train in the last issue of my show. "Alas, soon his stubborn heart shall rise up against he who sired him. Yea, I have foreseen it. Now's the time, then, to plan new mischief against the son of Odin. After all, he hath many lessons yet to learn." He, he, he. So they're setting up Odin as a major villain here in this last page. Gee, that was fun. I'm going to fuck with Thor a little more.
He's finally got his self-confidence back, and now he can accept that he is both man and God.
And now I'm going to fuck with him some more.
I'll show him.
And that is the Thor graphic novel, I Whom the Gods Would Destroy. What a piece of shit.
Wow. It was so graphic, though.
Yeah, we get, say, Don Blake gets laid. Uh-huh. Yeah, he tries to commit suicide twice. Times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh, what a mess. Okay, where should I start? Well, the artwork actually is not that bad.
No, Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan, sorry, yeah. Paul Ryan's good. I like him.
Yeah.
I used to like DP7, the new universe.
Oh, yeah.
He did that.
And that would have been actually about the same era.
Yeah.
So, the artwork basically, it's boring.
If anything, yeah, he's a little stiff.
Yeah, and it reminds me a little bit of the Marvel House style in the late 70s, early 80s, and almost like romance comic art. And I think that the artist that it reminds me the most of is probably the guy who used to draw Dazzler, whose name was Frank Springer. That was him. Or maybe an artist like Michael Vosburgh, you know, those people.
Yeah,
They were all through the 70s and into the 80s that they were using. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of Ramona Fraiden. And I'm trying to think of some of the other artists who had similar styles, like, you know, Paul Kupperberg and, you know, people of that nature, sort of Marvel's B-list artists. And so you got some nice workmanlike, graphically, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
There's some weird stuff about it.
Tells the story. There's not, you know, too much weird, really bad stuff about it, yeah.
Right, but what gets me a little bit is, why would they think that they would want a 64-page graphic novel by this artist? You know, to me, the graphic novel thing, that's supposed to be for something really special. And this could have been told in two issues of the ThorCon. You know, I can understand you get somebody like Jack Kirby, or you got Jim Starlin. people with a really exciting style, somebody who could really make a big production. You remember the Walt Simonson himself did the second graphic novel for Marvel, which was the Star Slammers.
Yeah.
And great graphic novel, incidentally. But this artist is just kind of dull.
He's very similar to I want to say whoever did the new Teen Titan or the New Mutants graphic novel.
Oh, Bob McLeod.
Bob McLeod, yeah. It's again that sort of generic style.
I think Bob McLeod actually had a more dynamic style.
He's a little more expressive, yeah.
Yeah. And this is, like you said, very stiff, and it's just not anything special. And like I said, I think they could have told this in a couple of issues of the regular comic. But the really weird thing about this now, the story, it's kind of dumb. Don Blake obviously resolved all this stuff a long time before.
You would think, yeah.
Yeah. The thing that gets me, though, is why this thing was published to begin with.
Because probably because it had already been drawn. There probably was like a couple issues of Thor at one point, and then they decided to go that new direction with it, sort of. And
yeah, I suppose that's that possible.
Was going on.
Yeah, that could be. Because you'd think, okay, at this point, Walt Simonson had already taken over the Thor comic. And what does he do in the first two issues? He eliminates Don Blake from the picture altogether.
Yeah.
So whatever this was intended to set up, it's just done now.
Yeah.
And why Marvel chose to release this thing at all? I mean, it's 3 years after Simonson took over the book. This is continuity that's far beyond the pale. This stuff is never coming back.
Yeah, it's very odd, because if you have people that are into the Walt Simonson Thor, and they're like, oh, Thor graphic novel, well, yeah, sign me up. And then they're like, this? What? Wait, what?
Well, I was in that exact position. I mean, I own this graphic novel, and and I was in that exact same position. I pre-ordered it, thinking, hey, this is going to be a Thor graphic novel based on the current continuity, and then I got this.
Ooh.
So to me, it was a big disappointment, and I, I paid $5.95 for this thing.
That is unfortunate.
Cover price $5.95 in the U.S., $6.95 in Canada. See? And so, and
good
really,
thing I didn't pick it up because I would have paid $6.95.
Yeah, seriously. and really not worth. I would say.
But then again, stiff in her underwear. I
mean, so that's true. We got. Don Blake getting some nookie. We got Sif in her underwear. Not once.
Oh,
not
twice.
Twice. Three times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but as Thor stories go, well, certainly not one of my favorites. But
yeah, he didn't destroy any trees. Fall through any holes.
But next episode, we are going to have some tree death going on.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yeah, and that'll be next episode in Radio Free Asgard, episode number 51. And so I think we've kind of been through this and can go ahead and wrap up the episode here. Hardly the epic story that you would think for episode number 50. But again, it's kind of something that doesn't really fit into continuity. It's kind of a long story. And it's kind of a unique place because it was released after it really didn't mean anything.
I say, I'm pretty sure it seems like something that was just in a drawer somewhere. And they're like, well, we already paid somebody for this. We're out the money. We might as well at least use it.
And let's play it up as a special event.
Yeah. It seems like, a drawer filler issue, where somebody falls behind in their deadline or whatever.
And that's exactly how it reads.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I guess they can't all be winners, but Marvel, shame on you.
Well, fool you once, shame on them. Fool you twice, shame on you.
And really, at this point, I think it really got to a point where I was looking at every graphic novel before I would buy it.
Yeah, this one will teach you a valuable lesson. See, so there you go. It wasn't a complete waste. Yeah,
but after the Raven banner, it kind of increased my trust again.
I don't even know what the Raven banner is.
The Raven banner was, and this is something that we'll be covering on the show maybe eventually, was a graphic novel that was drawn by Charles Vess.
Ooh, loving it. See, absolutely. If this one had been done by Charles Vess, that would have been something.
He would not have drawn this story.
No,
he would
not. No.
And it took place in the Asgardian world, but it did not have Thor in it.
Nice. Nice.
So it was really a kind of a fantasy story set in this Asgardian universe. And it was cool stuff and really, really fantastic artwork. And again, you know, I do hope to cover everything on this show eventually.
I think the only other Marvel graphic novel I ever read was the New Mutants one.
Right, yeah. Oh, that was another good one. And yeah, and like we were saying about Bob McLeod earlier, he did sort of have that Marvel House style from the late 70s. But I do think that there was more...
Yeah, his is more expressive. He's got more range, I think.
I think that you know the thing about McLeod is that he had a lot of Neil Adams' influence to his work. And kind of the way he would draw, the way that he would compose panels and things. And really, you don't see that in here. The layout and the story style of this comic book remind me of things like Young Romance.
Yeah, very straightforward, very... Nothing surprising.
Right.
The most surprising thing was that split panel with Sif on the one side and him on the other side in the middle of the panel and then the other stuff on the outside there.
Right, which doesn't really inspire a lot of confidence.
Yeah, it wasn't that great. Yeah. But then again, he was given the story he was working with, I don't know how you could have embroidered that piece of crap. So
Yeah. It's you can gold plate a turd, but it's still a turd.
Yeah, that's for sure.
All right, so I guess we're going to wrap it up. So thanks very much for listening. And, of course, thanks for sticking with us for a whole 50 episodes. It seems incredible.
Wow.
We do have something really cool coming up in episode number 52, our one-year anniversary. And I'm going to tell you all about it next time. So thanks very much for listening. And thanks, Scott, for joining us this time.
Thank you for having me once more.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope the next time I'm on, it's a better story.
It will be. Trust me, it will be. You can't get too much worse than this. So thanks again, Scott. And also very many thanks to my invisible co-host, Paul Schweikart, who contributed to this and many of the other episodes. And thanks to you listeners as well. I know I don't talk that much about you guys, but if I could give shout-outs to all of you, I would. But of course, you know, to Steve and to Steven and to Jif and to Robert, and to all the rest of you who are out there listening who I don't know your name, and to you people who joined us when we joined the Comics Podcast Network, your listenership is very greatly appreciated, and I really do hope to continue to be here for a good long time to come. So anyway, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.